This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
When it's time to go after the biggest buck of your life, you need gear that will not only make your life easier, but that you can also depend on for years to come. Lone Wolf Custom Gear has been the leader in mobile hunting equipment for over 40 years and started out right here in Wisconsin. From inventing the climbing stick to perfecting ultralight tree stands, Lone Wolf Custom Gear continues to innovate and put the best mobile hunting equipment on the market with a ton of fantastic accessories that allow you to customize your gear exactly how you want it. Whether it be the high-end DeQuisto series sticks and stands or the affordable Patriot series, you'll have the peace of mind knowing that you're hanging off of gear that was 100% made in the USA, right here in the Midwest, in fact, and has been designed and perfected by some of the best whitetail hunters in the world. Not to mention, it has an unconditional lifetime warranty that's so good your grandkids and even great-grandkids will be able to use it when they're hunting. Go build your kit out today at lonewolfcustomgear.com.
E-scouting is the crucial first step to any great adventure, but sometimes we gotta swap the muck boots for flip-flops and the shotguns for fishing rods and get out on the water to recharge those batteries. Whether you're in search of the lunker that broke you off last summer or trying to get the family out for a day on the water, you need to have a game plan. That's where Onyx Fish comes into play. With detailed bathymetry maps, expert information, historical fisheries data, and filters that allow you to hone in on your next favorite lake for a multitude of species, this is an angler's best friend. Shoot, I'm actually planning a father-son trip to the North Woods with some buddies right now, and I already feel like I've got a game plan in place to catch more fish than the rest of those guys. And the best part is, it's easy, intuitive, and based on the same platform as our beloved Onyx Hunt app. Go check it out today and start finding your next honey hole at onxmaps.com/fish.
Turkey season is here, and when it comes time to hit the woods and chase some gobbles, you need gear that's as ready to hunt as you are. That's why I'm proud to be partnered with Huntworth Gear. This spring, I'll be running around the woods in the Durham lightweight pants, which have been my go-to pants for everything the last couple of years. They've got a waterproof seat and knee panels that keep you dry when setting up, and breathable, quick-drying fabric to keep you comfortable after a long walk through tall, dewy grass, or when you're putting on the miles looking for that lonely long beard. On top, I'll be wearing the Grayling Heat Boost hoodie if it's cold, and the Camden lightweight hoodie when it's hot. And don't forget the Ames lightweight gloves with fingerless index and thumb holes that give you the dexterity you need to run those calls unimpeded all season long. Go build your kit out today at huntworthgear.com or visit the hunting section of your local farm and fleet or fleet farm to find it in person. Southwest Wisconsin is home to one of the most unique trout fisheries in the country, with thousands of miles of spring-fed streams twisting their way through valleys, pastures, and prairies. And one of the best ways to experience this fishery is with a fly rod in hand. Good Chance Fly Fishing is your guide to all that the Driftless has to offer, whether you're an experienced angler or just looking to get out and try something new. To find more info and book your trip, visit goodchanceflyfishing.com.
If you've listened to this show before, I'm sure you've noticed that if there's one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, it's the importance of public lands and waters. Shoot, I'd even venture to guess that 90% of what we talk about on this show takes place on public lands. We all love the challenges we face and the memories we create in these wild places, and we need folks who are in our corner to protect them. That's why we're proud to have partnered with the good folks over at the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Wisconsin BHA chapter was formed to provide a voice to hunters and anglers throughout Wisconsin that want to protect our public land legacy, and everyone involved works their tails off to protect public lands and access those public lands and waters.
stay informed on all things public lands, the issues facing our public lands, policies that might affect them, and to cross paths with some of the coolest outdoorsmen out there, I highly encourage you to join the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, or at least the chapter of whatever state you live in. To join BHA, visit backcountryhunters.org/join, and to learn more about what we have going on here in the Badger State, visit backcountryhunters.org/Wisconsin. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Lone Wolf Custom Gear. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, hope you're all doing well. I hope you are enjoying a smoky July as we had this last week, but enjoying, by the time this comes out, a nice little break in the heat. I certainly am. I'm a little sore today. I'm coming off of a lot of ground covered at the Beast Mode Archery Challenge down at Tyrol Basin on Sunday. Shot that with my buddy Jason and busted and lost a few more arrows than I have in years past. I was a little rusty. I was playing around a little too much with that thumb button. And long story short, I should have just done a lot more practice before heading out there and, you know, sending 50 plus yard shots at foam, but had a great time and, you know, built the confidence up a little bit. It felt good to sling some arrows and cover some ground, stretch the legs a little bit. And, yeah, just an awesome, awesome event, as it always is. Brian's the man. He puts on an awesome 3D shoot. But this week, you guys, before we dive into anything, I've got a couple of announcements, a couple of links I got to share here and push. The first one being, of course, you guys all know, you've seen the post. The deer season kickoff is going to be Wednesday, August 12th at 6 p.m. at the Great Dane in Fitchburg. You can find an RSVP link in the show notes below. It'll be a little hyperlink down there. It is going to be fantastic. E-scouting seminars for myself, Derek Melkor, Paul Lanier, and Jacob Sklenner, followed by Q&A. We've got some awesome raffle prizes that are coming into the fold here. So I'm super excited for that. So mark your calendars, please, please, please RSVP at that link so that I know that you're coming. I can get a good head count and we can make sure that there's plenty of food for all of you guys to have, but it's entirely free, free food, free beer, free information within reason. But it's going to be an awesome time. Super excited for that. And as we lead up to the deer season kickoff, you may have seen another post that I had, be doing some Wisconsin Sportsman merch, just a limited run of hats. We've got Army Olive and Tan and Brown and Tan. They're gonna have a little leather patch with the Wisconsin Sportsman logo burnt into those. Gonna look great. Richardson 112s, if you're a hat snob like me and you care about what model your hat is. But I think they look pretty sharp. If you want to pre-order those, no money down to place your order, but please use the link down in the show notes there to reserve your hat, indicate what color you want. They're going to be $25 if you pick them up in person. Otherwise, it'll be $25 plus shipping if you need them shipped to you. But the deadline for that to place your pre-order is going to be next Wednesday, the 29th by midnight. So really Thursday morning, I'm ordering. So get your hat orders in if you would like one. I'm not really making any money off these things. This is just purely, I want you guys to have a cool hat to wear out into the field and to rep the pod. Because I feel like it's about time. You know, it's been a few years. It's about time we had a little bit of merch. So we're gonna try our hand at that. You'll find links, again, to the deer season RSVP and the hat order down in the show notes below. And most important link, the whole reason that we're doing this episode today, actually, is a link to sign up for the Learn to Hunt Bears with Hounds. Tony Cordero, our R3 coordinator for the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers chapter here in Wisconsin, along with Elena Roth, my guest today, they are going to be running a Learn to Hunt Bears with Hounds in the Northwoods, behind the dogs, chasing bears. If you've never hunted behind hounds, I know I say this all the time, but if you've never hunted behind hounds, you owe it to yourself to experience this at least once. And if you've never seen a black bear, and you want to, or at least want to have a really dang good chance at it, I cannot recommend this event enough.
So find the information down there, RSVP, sign up for that. It's a Saturday and a Sunday. Tony's the man. You're going to have a great time. I can assure you of that. You are going to have a great time. But as I mentioned, this week, I got a chance to sit down with Elena Roth. She's a Wisconsin DNR biologist for Vilas County and also a houndsman. She and her husband run hounds for bears in the state of Wisconsin. They run for bears. I didn't know you could run for bobcats as well as coyotes and all sorts of good stuff. Stuff you're going to hear in this episode. But they run a super, super cool, unique operation up there. And I just wanted to have her on to learn more about black bears and predators in the state of Wisconsin. So we dive into a bunch of misconceptions about Wisconsin's black bears. We talk about what a year looks like from a research perspective from Elena and her team, and also just what a year looks like through a black bear's eyes. And learned a ton. Like, this was one of the most interesting episodes I think we've ever done. And my mind was blown about a lot of things, from the hibernation practices and habits that these black bears have, the amount of ground that they cover, what their diet consists of, and also just like what the actual hunting of these bears looks like. If you've never done any hound hunting or bear, excuse me, if you've never done any bear hunting, or even if you have, I think you're going to really, really, really enjoy this episode. It's super informative. We dive into baiting versus running the dogs, or a combination of the two, the pros and cons and benefits. We talk about DIY bear hunting and ways you can do that in the state. The importance of public land, as always, in this pursuit. Ways to care for the meat and things to make with said meat. How to prep the hide and take care of all that good stuff and all that. It's just an absolutely fantastic episode. So I'm super appreciative of Elena for taking time to just shed some light on this topic. I learned a ton. I think you guys are going to learn a ton. If you have the opening and the availability in your schedule, I would strongly suggest going up and getting behind the dogs with Elena and her husband and Tony on August 8th and 9th. That's going to be an awesome event. So RSVP at the links in below for Tony's Learn to Hunt for the deer season kickoff. Place a hat order if you so please. But huge shout out to Elena for coming on the show. Huge shout out to Tony for putting on an awesome event. And huge shout out to you guys for listening to this podcast and keeping the train rolling. I appreciate you guys a ton. And I will talk to you next Tuesday. Thanks, guys. All right. Joining me on this week's episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman, I have Elena Roth with the Wisconsin DNR. Elena, how are we doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. I am excited that fall is getting a little bit closer, I guess, finally. Like, I don't know. It still feels like a long ways away. But I know that for the bear hunters in Wisconsin, this is kind of like work season right now, getting all the bait out and keeping tabs on stuff. Or at least I assume. I don't really know a whole lot about Wisconsin bears, but you do, which is why you were on the episode. So I'm excited to be chatting Wisconsin black bears with you and learning more about them and hunting them in various ways and kind of just, I don't know, some of the lesser known things about Wisconsin black bears. I'm excited for this one. Before we dive into this though, can you tell us a little bit about kind of who you are, where you're from, and how you got to be what you're doing with the Wisconsin DNR?
Sure. Yeah. So I am originally from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I grew up doing a lot of hunting and camping and fishing with my family and decided to pursue a career in natural resources and was very fortunate in that the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point was close to home and reasonable price-wise. And so I got my bachelor's degree in wildlife management there. And I decided I wanted to be in the field. I wanted to work in different parts of the country. So I moved around for about 5 years. I worked in New Mexico for about a year doing black bear and mountain lion research. And then I moved out to Oklahoma and worked on a cattle ranch and did some quail research. And then I started my master's program with Louisiana State University and studied eastern wild turkeys and turkey hunters and how they interact with one another. And really kind of got into the game bird niche a little bit and still do some work on that now. And after grad school, I got a little homesick. I had been away from home for a few years, and I was fortunate to get a position with the Wisconsin DNR. I was the assistant upland game bird ecologist, so statewide management of pheasants, turkeys, grouse, things like that. And then I got promoted about 5 years ago. So now I am the Vilas County Wildlife Biologist. I'm based in North Central Wisconsin, and I'm also the statewide ruffed grouse specialist. So still have my hands in game birds, but all game species are really a passion for me.
Super cool. That's awesome. Yeah, you got your hands full up there, I'm sure, with all the stuff running around up there. How does the, when did you mentioned it there, like you did black bear research early on and stuff. How does that kind of translate back to looking at black bears and their management here in the state of Wisconsin now compared to out west?
It's really different. It's really different. And I had some notes for some of your questions for later on talking about the differences between the two. But in Wisconsin, I would say we are fortunate to have a very abundant, very healthy black bear population that's actually continuing to expand into southern parts of the state. They're showing up in areas that we haven't historically seen them. We have very high survival rates, very high reproduction. We have large bears. There's a lot to forage on here. So it's a very productive, good place for black bears to be. And out west, it's a good place for bears to be as well, but it's a completely different landscape. When I worked in New Mexico, and I've hunted bears in New Mexico a couple of times as well, it's very arid and there's a lot less forage. There's no baiting allowed, and conditions are very different. So you can harvest a black bear in New Mexico that's 5-6 years old. You know, maybe it's a boar that's a couple hundred pounds. And in Wisconsin, you could have a six-year-old boar that's 300-400 pounds already. So very different, lower survival rates, lower reproduction, because food sources there are kind of boom and bust. So it looks a lot different. Their management techniques are different. We're pretty unique here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, sounds like it. What is it that contributes to making northern Wisconsin such prime black bear habitat?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different factors that play into that. I would say just general habitat is very good, especially like North Central Wisconsin here where I am in Vilas, Oneida counties. We have tons of oak, lots of acorn, very important food source. We have a lot of other soft and hard mast sources, so blackberries, raspberries, hazelnuts, etc. We have lots of water, and bears tend to be associated with those riparian areas. They like lowland swampy areas, riparian corridors. They have a high need for water, which is a little bit different than like game birds, which, you know, might not even drink water and just get it off the dew and the vegetation that they're eating. But bears do have a strong need for water. So that helps a lot. If you think about like fat, you need a lot of water to put on a lot of fat. So that's important. We have a lot of that. And we have a lot of protein rich forage. So forbs, flowering plants, we have a lot of that as well. And it's also important to note we have a lot of bait on the landscape, an insane amount of bait on the landscape. You can start baiting in Wisconsin in the middle of April, and then you can bait all the way until the end of the season, which ends sometime in October typically. And there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of baits. If you go on public land, it doesn't take long at all to find a bait trail. So that helps as well. And we're finding that in our research. We've got collared sows with cubs, and we're finding that reproduction and litter sizes and overall body weights are definitely enhanced by all the food sources that are out there.
Gotcha. One of the things I didn't hear was, I think what a lot of people think about with bears, or at least I do, is like that carnivorous side of the diet there. So they're primarily eating more nuts and berries and, you know, other stuff, but like they're not, I guess, can you debunk the myth that the high black bear population is a major contributor to the declining deer herd?
So I would argue first that there's not a declining deer herd in Wisconsin at all.
Okay.
Extremely abundant. So that would be the first thing if you're looking at a statewide scale, different by localized areas, but on a statewide scale, deer abundance is going up. I will say it's a good point. And black bears are extremely efficient at depredating fawns. They're our number one fawn predator, because when they are born in June, and they are less than a couple weeks old and they can't really run behind mom. And they're in that phase of life where they're trying to just find cover and stay low and stay bedded down all day waiting for mom to come back and feed. They're extremely vulnerable, and bears are very patient and very good at searching for fawns during that time of year. And they will find them and they will depredate them very efficiently. So they do. But as soon as fawns are able to run a little bit more and escape that, then bears really are not putting the effort and energy into depredating them that way. And then they do better. So yeah, there's a lot of fawn predation that occurs from bears, more than wolves, coyotes, anything else. But not to the point that they are negatively impacting the deer population. And bears in general are going to eat a lot more plant matter in their lifetime than they are animal matter.
Got it. Yeah, I suppose. I guess I was thinking about a couple of years ago when everybody was freaking out about the Northwoods deer population on the decline. So it's good to know that that's not the case up there, and especially that bears, aside from fawn depredation, aren't really, I guess, now that I think of it, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Like nobody's, I guess they're not like a pack predator. They don't often chase things down a whole lot or anything. Do they scavenge? Are they like roadkill eaters and stuff like that? Like were they lean into that opportunity? And but aside from that, they really stick to a pretty much plant-based diet.
Yep. Yeah, they definitely scavenge, and they're opportunistic. Like if they come across, you know, some mammal or other animal that they can predate upon, they will. But they're not like a wolf. They're not going to hunt things down. They're not going to chase. They're not going to ambush prey like a mountain lion would. It's a lot more opportunistic.
Got it. What does the interaction between black bears and wolves look like up by you?
That's another very controversial thing. People have a lot of opinions on it, but in general, I would say bears are doing very, very well, and wolves are doing very, very well here as well. Like to the point where every available niche for wolves has been filled in northern Wisconsin, and they seem to be coexisting fairly well. I will say, like, we have cameras on all of our bear baits, and we will see wolves push bears off bait, and we'll see the opposite too. We'll see a big bear push a wolf off a bait too. So there's definitely some competition over baits. We see that. There's rumors of wolves pulling hibernating bears out of dens and killing them, and I'm sure that it does happen on occasion. But in our research, like I said, we are collaring black bears. We have every winter for probably 5 or 6 years now in a row. We have not seen evidence of that, and definitely not on a population level impacting scale. So I'm sure there is some competition, but like I just stated, bears are eating a lot more plant material and wolves are eating almost exclusively animal material. So their niches don't overlap all that much.
Sure. Yeah, totally makes sense. That's super interesting. So you mentioned that, you know, you can start baiting in April, right? And so, I mean, it's a long year if you're a bear hunter in Wisconsin, at least if you're running bait, right? What does a year look like for a black bear, and also for like from a black bear research standpoint? What types of projects are you guys working on throughout the year, and what are the bears doing throughout the year?
Sure. So I'll start with the research side. So I'm in the Bureau of Wildlife Management with DNR, which means that my main job duties focus a lot on habitat management. That's the biggest thing we do. And then surveys and a little bit of like education, outreach, administration, things like that. So when I do get to help with research, it's a different bureau. It's the Office of Applied Science that's leading that research. So it's a crew that'll rove around the state and collar bears and do research. But when they're in my area, which they are frequently because there are a lot of bears in Vilas County, they'll call on me to have that, you know, local knowledge. How do we get to this point? It's really remote on the state forest. How do we get there? What do we do? You know, can you call this landowner? Do you know them? That sort of thing is where I'll come in and help assist. And then when we are out in the field, I oftentimes get to help with that too, which is really cool. That's the kind of snuggling baby bears in the wintertime stuff. That's like why you become a biologist. So in the wintertime, that's what we're doing. We wait until about March at the earliest when the cubs are a little bit more developed, and we'll rely on reports from the public or landowners. So people who are out and about in the fall or early winter and find a bear den, they can report it to us, and then we'll go out. If it's a sow with cubs or yearlings, we'll collar that sow, tranquilizer, collar, and then we'll fit ear tags to the cubs and take measurements and take blood samples, hair samples, a sample for aging, things like that. And then throughout the rest of the year, OAS is tracking them, their GPS collars. I believe they do some other kind of measurements. I'm not totally familiar with what they do the rest of the year. And then we go out again in the winter and help with that. So that's kind of my, you know, limited knowledge on the research side, like the nitty gritty of what they're doing there. For bears, what their annual cycle looks like, black bears mate in June and July. So when you have your game cameras out on your bait sites, that is one of the only times of the year that you'll see adult bears spending time together. And that's like a dead giveaway. It must be mating season. You'll see smaller sows and larger boars together on a bait site. That's the only time of year that they'll tolerate one another. So they're breeding during that time of the year. They go through spring and summer just absolutely packing the feed on. Because they are trying to build up those fat reserves so that they can go into winter healthy and have enough fat to get through. In the fall, that's when we have our hunting seasons. Bears' diets change very drastically throughout the year. When they come out of the den in early spring and summer, they are really focused on that early green, nutrient-rich, protein-rich forage, things like clover and other flowering plants that are the first to green up in open areas, grasses, anything. And then they'll switch as mass come into development. So things like raspberries, blueberries, and cherries are all ripe right now, and they are really hammering that right now. You can even see, like, as a bear hunter, you'll see your bait start to slow down a little bit when you have that big influx of some kind of natural vegetation that they prefer, because no matter what bait you are putting out there, they almost always prefer natural forage. So right now, like I said, blueberries, raspberries, and cherries. And then the next thing that'll come through will be blackberries. And then we'll start to see in the fall the hazelnuts and the acorns will really start popping off. And those are very important favorite food sources. And that's kind of a common phenomenon we'll see from bear hunters when we have a really good acorn year. That acorn drop normally aligns pretty well with when bear hunting season starts. And people will be like, what the heck? My bait did good all summer and now it's just shutting off. Like, what happened? And a lot of times that's what it is. Is there some abundance of natural food that they're getting somewhere else and they're hunkering down and they're focusing on that? So yeah, we get through fall. If a bear gets through fall without being harvested, they will go into their dens anytime between October and December. Sows that are pregnant will go in or going to be pregnant will go into their den a little bit earlier and they'll stay in a little bit later. Boars will kind of wait until the last minute. And even if we have like a nice warm winter sunny day, a boar might come out of the den and kind of hang out for a while. He might move dens where a sow is going to stay put with her cubs or her yearlings and be pretty high fidelity to the den. Females give birth to their cubs in the den in about January, and they will be born. They'll be less than a pound. They'll have, their eyes will be shut. They'll be blind and they're really pretty helpless. And they're just nursing on mom, for the whole rest of the winter. And then they'll start to develop. And by the time they're 6 months old, they can be 50 to 80 pounds. It's kind of unbelievable how fast they can pack that weight on, and develop. And then they come back out in April or May. Emerge from the den and they're ravenous. When they're in the den, I should mention they are not truly hibernating because they can wake up from time to time. Like if you come across a bear den in the wintertime, you shouldn't assume like, oh, I'm safe because it's totally asleep. If you're causing a racket, like that bear could come out and be active. So it's more of a state of torpor, kind of a different, you know, mild hibernation, but they will not urinate and they will not defecate and they typically don't really eat. So it's kind of amazing biologically they do that. They slow their metabolism down. They go from their heart beating like, I think 50 to 60 beats a minute in the summertime, like a resting heart rate. And then in the winter, it's like 4 to 20 beats per minute. It's way slowed down. Respiration is way slowed down. They're just kind of reserving themselves. And then they pop out in the spring and basically the whole cycle starts again.
No kidding. That is crazy that they're able to slow, like just, I didn't realize that they didn't urinate or defecate or anything for that long. I mean, holy smokes. That's crazy. Just, yeah, like you said, from a biological standpoint, that's quite the feat. That's something.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of medical and research implications to that too, that they've been looking into for years, like people who are in comas or they're immobilized, like we'll have muscle atrophy if we're in bed for too long or in a coma. Well, you know, urine can basically poison us if we're not able to release it. So they have looked into that for medical research. How can bears cope with this and pop out in the spring and be totally fine? So yeah, maybe in the future, there'll be some developments related to that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I want to touch on a couple of things you just said there.
Yeah.
When it comes to looking at like bear dens, what types of things are you looking for? How do they, are they digging out holes underneath stuff, or like, you know, I'm picturing like a root wad type scenario or some sort of a natural depression, or like where, what types of areas are they making their dens in? Do they make them, yeah, or do they find them?
So it can be either or. They okay. can use an old recycled den or just a suitable area. They don't necessarily have to excavate something themselves. But in Wisconsin, I would say the most common den is what you described. It'll be like a wind-thrown tree with a big root ball and a cavity underneath that they may excavate more. Mm-hmm. It's been amazing the last few years to get to help with this bear research and see where bears have den. Sometimes these dens are long tunnels that are, you know, 4 feet long before you get to kind of the opening where they actually nest in the wintertime, and trying to get a big old sow that's tranquilized pulled up out of a cavity like that is really tough. But we'll see that most commonly. But they can really den just about anywhere. Some of the more incredible ones that I've seen are basically just open nests. I used to be the biologist in Marinette County, and there was a boar that had denned in a cut cornfield, and he had basically raked together some old corn stalks and made a bed and laid on top of it all winter long and would get snowed on, and it was unbelievable. And so I would get a call like twice a week, there's a dead bear laying in this cornfield, and we checked it out, and it wasn't. It was just a, it was a hibernating boar, and that's all he needed. And we've seen that in other places too, like along cattail marshes. They'll have a bed of cattails and just nest right on the top of it. When I was out west working, we've seen a lot more dens and like rock outcroppings. That was a lot more common. So kind of anywhere.
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick sec to tell you about Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Lone Wolf Custom Gear is as good as it gets when it comes to mobile hunting equipment. Whether you're a saddle or stand guy, public land or private, Lone Wolf Custom Gear has a set of sticks, a stand, a camera arm, and any number of accessories to get you closer to your target buck. To make it even better, everything is 100% USA sourced and made right here in the Midwest. And it's even assembled right across the river in Iowa by hunters who love chasing deer just as much as you do. To build your kit today, go visit lonewolfcustomgear.com. Now, let's get back to the episode.
Gotcha. Opportunistic little guys. That's something.
Very.
Yeah, that's crazy that they just, I guess, make a mattress of corn stalks and weather the storm. That's a brave bear, I guess.
Yes.
You mentioned, you know, they bounce around from food source to food source, from the berries to the, you know, the hazelnuts and stuff like that, the acorns. Are they fairly nomadic? Or I guess how, like, what's like the average range of a black bear in Wisconsin?
Yeah, great question. Boars are much more nomadic, and they will do a lot more traveling. They'll put a lot more miles on for a couple different reasons. The first being that when a boar is about a year and a half, so when he's had that first whole year with his mother and they're getting into that second spring and she's getting ready to breed, she kicks him away. She doesn't want him. She won't tolerate him, tolerate him anywhere in her home range. So he'll really have to boogie then to establish a new area for himself. So he'll probably move a pretty great distance during that period of his life. And then when they're breeding, they're going to be doing a lot more moving around as well. But on average, a male black bear in Wisconsin, his home range will be about 36 square miles in his lifetime. Oh, wow. And a sow will be much smaller. It'll only be probably about 6 square miles. So a sow, when she finds her, you know, regular dependable food sources, she's going to be hanging out in a very small area, whereas a boar is going to do a lot more traveling. And they will move. Yeah. When there's acorns available somewhere, they'll put a couple miles on to get to a new food source. But yeah, in general, the sows will tolerate their female cubs. They can kind of stick around the same area as they grow older, but not the males. So
got it. That's fascinating. It's interesting because, like, it's one of the few species in Wisconsin that were not, I guess not the few species, but one of the species in Wisconsin, the hunting season doesn't coincide with the breeding season. right? Like our turkey season is during breeding season, our whitetail season during breeding season. But you're effectively, for lack of a better term, you're hunting black bears post rut when they're just on a food to bed pattern. If somebody were to, so I guess one of the things I didn't mention yet was you were a mentor for Learn to Hunt, correct?
Yes.
And we happen to have one coming up on August 8th and 9th with Tony Cordero up with you guys, and you guys are going to be hunting bears with hounds, right? Is that, I guess that's, I got, I started that thought and I didn't know how to, I didn't know what direction to take it. It seems like with bears, it would be a much more efficient way to hunt them if they are on a food to bed pattern, unless they're feeding and bedding fairly close by. I guess, can we break down sort of like the pros and cons of hunting bears with hounds versus hunting bears over bait? And I guess also, like, is there any DIY opportunity for bear hunters on public land in Wisconsin?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do, to answer that question first, there's, I think there's absolutely opportunity to DIY bear hunt in Wisconsin. In northern Wisconsin, we are so fortunate to have the abundance of public land that we do, millions of acres. We've got a like 1.2 million acre national forest in Wisconsin. There's millions of acres of state land. County land is our biggest public land segment that we have in northern Wisconsin that's all open to hunting. And it's all really excellent bear habitat, especially zones D, A, and B, I would say are really exceptional. As long as you are willing to make the time commitment and put the work in, I think you can definitely be successful bear hunting. If you don't have hounds and you're new to it, I would definitely go the baiting route. One thing I've talked to others about before in the past is some people are kind of turned off by the baiting, which I understand for different reasons, but truly in Wisconsin, I think to try and like sit on an oak ridge and wait for a bear to come out would be exceptionally rare. You have to kind of put it into context. So in Wisconsin, we have like over a million deer, right? So you can sit on an oak ridge and you'll probably see a deer. Even in Vilas County, where deer densities are a lot lower than in southern Wisconsin, you'll still have opportunities if you know where they are, you're looking for sign. We only have like 25 to 30,000 bears in the entire state. So your odds of just sitting somewhere and hoping that one walks by is extremely rare. So I would definitely go the baiting route. Other methods people have talked about is like spot and stalk. Can I spot and stalk? They do that out west all the time. Can I do that here? You really can't because the habitat and the land cover just isn't conducive to that. You can't see anything. You can't see any amount of distance. Right. So that one is tough. So I really think baiting is the way to go if you're not going to use hounds. And the biggest thing, like I said, bait is very expensive and you really, really need to keep a bait up to keep it reliable and keep bears consistent, where I would kind of recommend starting a bait in June or July at the latest and probably try to bait at least once a week. And then as you get closer to kill season, so August, and definitely by September, you need to be baiting multiple times a week and probably a couple weeks before the season every day if you can. And that's really hard because a lot of people don't live up here. They have cabins up here. So that's where it gets tough. And that's where I think sometimes people rely on a guide or someone else who can keep those baits going and keep them consistent. So yeah, and that would be my DIY recommendation. As far as like pros and cons for hounds versus bait, I think both are great and it's whatever your preference is. I'm a houndsman, so I prefer the hounds, but it's so much more about the dog work and watching a puppy develop into a hound that's self-sufficient and develops all these different skills to be successful is the most rewarding part. I've only harvested 4 bears, and I think people think, oh, you've probably harvested like all these bears and done all these trips. And it's not so much like I love bear meat, but it's not so much about that. It's so much more about watching the dogs work. And I feel like anytime someone harvests a bear under our dogs, it's like a success for us as well.
Yeah, totally. How long have you been a houndsman hunting around dogs and especially in the bear, like the predator realm? Like I've gone coon hunting a couple times and like that's like you said, it's a totally different game than any other type of hunting. It's definitely not a bird dog. It's definitely just, I don't know. It's there's something in the way that they bay that kind of still makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up just a little bit. It's kind of just like that primal sort of feeling. How did you get into it? And I guess if somebody wants to get into it, like, what would you recommend? A good sort of path?
Yeah, good question. So I have not been doing it very long. I grew up, like I said, hunting and fishing, deer hunting, turkey hunting, small game, that sort of thing. So I had always been putting in for bear preference points. I knew someday I always wanted to bear hunt, but I didn't know what that would look like. And I started dating my husband about 8 years ago, and he has always had hounds. He grew up with them since he was a kid. And I remember when we started dating, he was like, you're either going to love this or you're going to hate this and we're not going to work out because it's really a lifestyle. And I loved it. I just adored it. I adored the dogs. I was just amazed at their skills and how tough and gritty they can be. But at the same time, these dogs are so affectionate and they love people and they are snuggly and it's so cool to see that they can do both things at the same time. And so, yeah, I've been doing it with my husband, Ryan, for, I guess, about 8 years now. And, yeah, it feels like it's been a lot longer, but it's a great sport. I really do enjoy it. I think there's a lot of misconceptions. Unfortunately, I think there's some bad apples that tarnish the reputation for the sport. But in general, I think Wisconsin has a very strong community of houndsmen and a lot of opportunity here as well. It's one of the most open states for other people to come and train dogs. You don't have to have any kind of license to come and train your hounds here on bears. And that's a very unique opportunity here.
Yeah, I'll say. What breeds are you running for bears?
We have plot hounds. Okay. So it's a big game hound out of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. What does the training look like? It's a long off season, right? And I know the bird dog folks, it's a lot of miles, a lot of conditioning, stuff like that. What does it look like for you guys with your dogs?
Yeah, so I would actually argue that there's not a lot of off season at all for us. So my philosophy and what my husband kind of has always instilled in me too is, like, this is a living, breathing animal. This is not just a tool. Like, this is not your bow when you're bow hunting that you just hang up on a shelf and wait for September to come. Like, you owe it to this animal to train them and use them and give them, like, a rich, fulfilling life all year long. Mm-hmm. So for us, what it looks like is it's less. I mean, it ebbs and flows throughout the year, but we will have puppies that we will train on raccoon. So that's something that we will do in the spring and the fall is train puppies on raccoon to get them to learn how to trail. So pick up a scent, jump the critter, tree it. That's kind of those basics we're instilling with raccoon training. And then for us, wintertime is really, really heavy into hunting as well because we're chasing bobcats. Bobcats will do and coyotes as well. Fox will do that in the winter too. But that's the same skills. So teaching them to cold trail, teaching them to take a hot track, teaching them how to bay up a cat or tree one. So that's what we do all winter. And that's from when gun season ends all the way until the leash law is in effect, basically in northern Wisconsin. We've had hunts like at the end of March and the beginning of April up here. Because if we have snow conditions, we can go out, we can train. So we do that. And then July, August, September, October, we're going to be running bears. So it's actually a fairly short off season. We do turkey hunt. We do a lot of that. So we take time off for that. We deer hunt as well. We'll take time for that. But we try our best not to have the hounds sitting on the chain for a long time.
For sure. That's super cool. I had no idea that you could run dogs for bobcats and all those other species as well to keep the dogs busy. That is, I don't know how nobody is talking about the fact that you can hunt bobcats with dogs. That's the coolest thing I've ever heard that you can do in Wisconsin.
That's crazy. Come up and do it sometime with us because it is, to me, I love bear hunting, but bobcat hunting is way cooler. Mm-hmm. It's way cooler. It's a lot more of a like cat and mouse game, for lack of a better term, because these bobcats don't have like a ton of endurance and stamina. They're not going to run 20 miles like a bear will. They're going to hide under a blowdown and then they're going to take out their backtrack and try and confuse the dogs and use strategy and be sneaky. And so you're behind your dogs on snowshoes or on foot all day long. and you'll end up in a blowdown and you'll see the cat run, you'll see the dogs, you'll see the cat. Like it is one of the coolest things ever.
That is crazy. And so they normally dive underneath things. They're not climbing up trees as much as, I don't know. I picture like the Western, like the mountain lion hunters and stuff out there. Like, is there a bobcat equivalent to that or not so much?
It's pretty similar. They will do the same. Like, they will tree on occasion. They will hide under a blowdown. They will just bay up, like kind of just stand there and be like, I'm done running. So they'll do all three. And I would say actually bobcat and mountain lion hunting is fairly similar.
Got it. That's so dang cool. I don't know how more people aren't talking about that. Like, that is the coolest thing I've ever heard. As you guys head out for, say you're going to run the dogs for a day, you're going to go on a bear hunt or a cat hunt or whatever it may be. Stick with bears for right now. Walk me through like what a day looks like running hounds for bears.
Yeah. So this time of year, you've probably noticed it's been really, really hot. So we have to be careful for the dog safety and for bear safety that we're trying to abide by certain thresholds. So one of the common kind of equations that we use as a reference would be you want to take the temperature and the relative humidity and add it together. And if it's 150 or less, then you're safe to run. If it gets over that 150, then it becomes a little bit dangerous for the dogs. So you got to keep runs a little bit shorter if it's that hot or not run at all. This wildfire smoke has been kind of a weird like left turn as well that we've been keeping in mind. And on the really smoky days, we haven't been running either just to be safe. But yeah, so we look at conditions and to beat the heat, we get up very early. So, you know, maybe get up at 4 o'clock, get the dogs collared. So they all have GPS Garmin collars that we use. Get the collars on the dogs, make sure that those are working. We'll load them up in the truck. And then we do run with baits. There's a couple reasons why. One of the main reasons being that it allows us to see the size of the bear that we're chasing. And during the training season, we really prefer to chase smaller bears because they will run more and faster. And we want to get a lot of miles on the dogs right now. We're really trying to get them back into shape. And also, they tend to be a little bit friendlier. They'll tree. They're a little bit easier to handle where once you start chasing these big bears, which we'll do in kill season, they don't run as far and they'll do a lot of stopping and walking and the dogs will bay them up and kind of catch is the term we use for it. So we try to do more running this time of the year if we can and chase smaller bears. And then we're also trying to avoid wolves. Wolves can be extremely dangerous for hounds. And those cameras and those baits help us a little bit to keep better tabs on where wolves may be at, avoid areas if we're getting pictures of wolves somewhere. So yeah, load the dogs up, check all our baits, check the cameras, see if there's a little bear that looks good to run. And then typically you'll let out maybe one or two dogs once you get to the bait, and we'll call those like trail dogs. And basically what they're doing is they're picking up the scent of the trail of the bear came in, he ate the bait, and then he left. It might have been 2 hours ago. It might have been 10 hours ago. And you want to have your good trail dog. So every dog has its own unique personality and its own skill set. And you'll have dogs that are excellent at trailing. You'll have dogs that are excellent at treeing. You'll have tough dogs that are good with a bait up bear. And you kind of use each of those unique characteristics just like a team and know when to put certain dogs into certain situations. So you start with your good trail dogs. You'll get the trail going and you can tell by their bark what they're doing. Like if they're on a cold trail and it's still cold, they're still grubbing it out. They're still trying to get to where that bear laid down. And then all of a sudden, the chase will get faster and they'll have a different bark. And we'll call that a jumped bear. That means it's aware it's being chased. It's been jumped out of its bed and now it's a hot track. Like now they're actively running away from the dogs. And that's where if we get a good crossing or we get close to the dogs again, we'll pack in more dogs to help chase the bear, speed up the chase, put a little more pressure on it. And then the goal would be that the bear trees during training season, and then you'll have the dogs treeing and you can tell by their bark then. It's like a short, choppy bark normally, very rapid, and that'll let you know that they have then treed the bear. And of course, the GPS unit helps us keep tabs on that activity as well.
That's so dang cool. That's awesome. And like, what a cool system of being able to like, I mean, kind of do both and run bait and have the dogs kind of coincide with that. I mean, that's about as efficient as I can think of. You could bear hunt in Wisconsin. That's really, really cool. You mentioned the young bears, they run more, they're less confrontational. As you start chasing some of these bigger boars, these older bears, talk to me a little bit about like the safety and how that coincides with running dogs. Will they turn around and stand off with them? I know everybody's I'll get to that in a sec. But I guess, yeah, like in terms of like dog bear interaction, what types of things do you see?
Yeah, for sure. So you have to be a lot more cautious. And I will say, like, in general, before I go down this road, like I said, I've been in this for about 8 years. And we've only had a handful of bear injuries to dogs, only a handful. And we've had way more weird stuff happen to dogs, like way more super weird vet bills, like ate a sock or ran into a stick with its mouth open or just porcupines, like weird stuff like that is a lot more common. So I don't want that misconception that like, oh, yeah, every time we let the dogs gets mauled by a bear. It's right. Not like that at all. It's relatively safe. And especially if you handle in a responsible way, which we try very, very hard to do. And I would say the responsible way to do that is, you know, your dogs, you know, who's tough, you know, who's a little bit more afraid of bears. Like there's certain dogs that really know I'm not going to get that close to a bear because they're scary and that's okay. And so, you know, when to use those dogs in those certain situations. And the other thing that we always try not to do is if we have a big bear that's stopping and it's catching, it's being baited up. We're not going to overload that bear with dogs. We're not going to have six dogs on that bear. It's going to be like maybe one or two, kind of holding it steady, two or three, hold it steady and not get it to the point of overloading it. And that's where things can get like really blow up and get kind of Western, for lack of a better term. So it's about handling and trying to avoid it as much as you can. Certainly it does happen. I'm not going to say it never happens, but I think you can do a fairly good job in avoiding it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Well, like you said too, there's so much other weird opportunity for mishaps with dogs that can go wrong. And I mean, at the end of the day, I like what you said there too about how you're not overloading the bear to a point where that fight or flight mode fully kicks in and God forbid they decide to choose fight or whatever. I mean, we've heard a couple horror stories on here about, people running scent hounds, tracking or blood trailing deer, and that buck gets cornered and just doesn't feel like he's got a way out and drops the tines and goes for a charge. And nobody wants that vet bill. Nobody wants to see that happen, hear about it, anything like that. So that's really, really cool. On the note of bycatch and everything there, like you mentioned, you start these dogs when they're puppies on raccoon and stuff like that. How do you break them off of that? Or do you, how do you get them like totally just keyed in on bears or cats or whatever it may be?
Yeah, it can be a little tough for sure. Like, and you can't really blame the dog if you're training a raccoon and then you get out during bear season and they're chasing a coon, like that does happen. But what we found, especially with these plot hounds, is they are so bred for bear. They are so into bears that sometimes it kind of naturally takes care of itself. But also bears are much like stinkier and they leave a lot more scent. It's a lot easier to trail a hot bear track versus like a hot coon track. And they're always going to have almost always have more interest in that bear track. So it's fairly natural. Bobcats is fairly rare for us to chase them in the summer and the fall, because on dry ground it's a lot harder to pick up that cat scent too. It does happen. But I would say, like, in general, when you're starting off a bait and you know that there's been a bear there, it's fairly uncommon, but we will see it with puppies. I mean, they'll chase deer, they'll chase raccoon and stuff like that, and then it's just kind of like a tone them off, catch them, and try over again. And that's kind of how they learn.
Yeah, sure, totally makes sense. In terms of harvesting bear, what firearm do you recommend for somebody who's never done it before, if they are going to go the firearm route versus the archery route? If they're going to go with dogs, I would assume you prefer the firearm. Like any calibers or recommendations you have for bears?
Yeah, I've seen people be successful with a lot of different calibers. I've harvested all my bears with my 12-gauge shotgun with a rifled barrel and a red dot scope. With slugs. And then I've seen young women and kids harvest bears very successfully with 243s. So those are good. I would say the thing with hounds, if you're going to go with a houndsman, you're hoping that this bear is treed or it's bait up on the ground, right, and you're going to be making a very close range shot. You do not want a scope on your gun. You want open sights or a red dot or something like that. That's better for close range shooting. We have had people harvest bears with archery equipment, but you have to be an incredible archer. Like, we have to kind of really vet you to make sure that you can really do that, because it can hurt dogs. Like, if you have a bear that you wound and it's got an arrow hanging out of it, like, how, like, totally, I'm going to release my dogs on this now with an arrow hanging out of it, like, that can be pretty dangerous. So we don't prefer that necessarily unless you're, like, really an expert. But other guns I've seen people be successful with, my husband has a 35 lever action rifle. That's a good one. 12 or a 20 gauge with slugs, that's good too. So 30-30, that's another good one. Yeah.
Got it. Stuff that most people can scrounge up somewhere. Yeah. So that's really good to know. Awesome. In terms of, like, table fare for these bears, do you encounter the same, like, I know people, at least myself, you know, you hear the Western guys talk about how, like, oh, you want the spring bears because their fat tastes better. You don't want them when they're eating salmon and they taste all fishy and stuff like that. How is the table fare for Wisconsin black bears?
I think it's excellent. I'm obsessed with bear meat. I think the biggest mistake that people make bear hunting in Wisconsin is that they treat it like a deer. So we're harvesting bears in early September. It can be extremely hot. And this is an animal that is black and also has typically a very thick layer of fat. And it's hard to cool it down. So you have to treat a bear very differently once you harvest it. You need to obviously field dress it. You take some pictures, but then you need to get the hide off the bear. It's not enough to pack the cavity with ice, which I've done with deer in the early season, pack it full of ice, cover it up with a tarp. Like, that can be good enough for a deer, but for a bear, it's not. You will spoil the meat. And not only can you spoil the meat, but the hide will slip and the hair will fall off, and then you're not going to be able to taxidermy this once in a lifetime animal. So you have to get that hide off as fast as you can. And actually, when we were in New Mexico on a spring bear hunt a few years ago, I harvested a bear that was, like, in a canyon. So it was a big hike out, and we actually skun it right there in the field. We quartered it, and then we put the quarters in a river and cooled off the meat that way, cooled it off really good, and then packed it up and we packed it out. The hide separated from the meat. So you probably don't have to do that in Wisconsin. Some people do. I mean, if you harvest a bear 3/4 of a mile in and it's 400 pounds, you might have to skin it and quarter and pack it out that way. But yeah, so that's really important, because I think a lot of times when people say, like, yeah, I had bear meat, but it tasted really terrible, sometimes I think it's because it's spoiled. That's something that I hear from processors all the time, like people bringing in bear that's, like, green and you don't want that. But for table fare, if you handle it properly, it's very good. You do have to be super cautious about trichinosis. That's a parasite that they can carry. You have to cook bear meat to at least 160 degrees. So I don't like bear meat like a steak. Like, I wouldn't want to cook a bear steak on the grill, because you have to cook it to well done, and then it's just tough. I do a lot of braising, a lot of smoking. I use a slow cooker, and then we grind a lot of bear and use it like you would use any kind of ground meat. I think it's delicious. The fat is really delicious. It's not like a venison where you want to cut all the fat and all the silver skin off, because it's kind of weird tasting. It's delicious on bear. And I am, like, a total nut about bear fat. My husband guides, and a lot of time his clients don't want the fat because they don't know what to do with it. So I'll get some from them. And then whenever we harvest a bear, and you can render it down, and you render it down, I put it into jars, and then I use it just like I would use an olive oil. Like, you can saute in it. You can bake pie crust, cookies, breads. You can treat your guns with it. You can oil your boots with it. And then you can also make really cool byproducts. So I make soap, lotion, and candles all from bear fat. And I love it.
That's super cool. I had no idea that there was obviously we've heard of, like, the, you know, the soaps and the bear grease and the rendering and stuff like that. I didn't know that you could rub it on guns and boots and all sorts of other stuff like that. That's super cool.
Yeah, it's all purpose.
Yeah, totally. One of the things you mentioned there too about getting the hide off quickly, I would imagine if you're somebody who has not skun a bear, you're probably going to want to let a professional handle that, right? Like, it's, I guess, like, how easy is it to accidentally screw up your bear hide?
It's fairly easy. Yeah, that's the tough thing with Wisconsin is you only get it. If you're in northern Wisconsin, you only get a tag every 10, 12, 13 years. So you're probably going to want to line up a processor in advance that, you know, can you skin this bear? And then also you're going to need to let them know, are you going to do a rug? Are you going to do a shoulder mount or a full mount? Because that's going to change how they skin that bear. So yeah, that part is fairly complicated. I'm not an expert at it by any means. My husband is, so I'm fortunate to have him do that side of it. But yeah, there's certain cuts you need to make with the wrists and the paws if you're going to do like a shoulder mount. So yeah, I would recommend if you're doing a DIY and haven't done it a lot, it would be good to line up a professional for that part of it.
Got it. Totally. In terms of just general, I mean, it could be black bear hunting, black bear behavior. Just generally with black bears, what do you think is some of the, like, one of the largest misconceptions about this species?
Yeah, there's definitely a few, and I think we've touched on a lot of them. I would say, yeah, it being like this big nasty predator that's going to hunt you down and eat you alive out there, that's one. Black bears are much more afraid of people than you are of them. It is extremely uncommon to be attacked by a black bear in Wisconsin, even a sow with cubs. It's so rare. And I think that's one that people worry about a lot. I'll get people who call me and say, yeah, I want to come up to Vilas County and go biking, but I just don't feel safe, you know, biking in the woods with bears. You shouldn't feel like that. You should never have any hesitation. It's good to be aware and not be totally oblivious, but 9 times out of 10, they're going to be way more afraid of you than you are of them. The other one that we kind of touched on a little bit, maybe not a misconception, but just kind of a cool thing about Wisconsin that maybe folks don't know, is that we are so such a rich heritage of hound hunting and lots of opportunity for doing that here. Very little restriction. Anyone can come and train their hounds here. That's kind of cool. Another one I hear a lot that I think is a misconception is that people think hound hunting or hunting with dogs is going to ruin a bait sitter's opportunity of hunting a bear. That's something I'll hear a lot of complaints about, like, oh, I had this bait that was doing great and then some dogs ran through it. Now it's turned off for the last week. And I would just really, really fight that. I think that's a very common misconception. I look at our baits and we've got like a couple ear tag bears this year that were ear tagged either from research or nuisance, and they show up on the baits and they get chased and they show up on the bait the next night and the next night. And it's really not deterring them from coming to the baits. It's kind of like they figure out they tree, the dogs go away, they're still coming back to the bait. So if that was true, houndsmen would have a horrible time starting baits or getting training. And if every time you chased a bear, they completely left the country and you never seen them again. So I think that's right. Kind of a misconception. Like I said earlier, when baits turn off, a lot of times it's because there's some other natural food source, not because hounds are running through the area. So yeah, those are kind of the main ones that come to mind.
Sure. That's super good to know. That was one of my questions I had earlier and I just didn't get back to it, but like, yeah, what the reset time for a bait site, or you just like, how long does it take for bears to go back to just what their normal routine would have been? And that's super interesting that after being chased by hounds, ran up a tree, that they're just like, eh, that was weird. Let's just go back and get a bite to eat. I like that. Yeah. That's super cool. What haven't we covered in the world of black bears? Like, it sounds like, you know, let me ask you this. If somebody's, say they are a concerned citizen, they're on the bike trail, there happens to be a black bear walking down the bike trail or whatever, what do you anticipate happening and what should folks do if they do happen to cross paths with a black bear in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I would say be calm. No need to panic. They definitely are more afraid of you than you are of them. In a situation like that, I would say make some noise, let the bear be aware that you're there, clap your hands, yell, wave your arms, kind of stand up, make yourself look big. The main thing for black bears would be give them an escape route. So don't make the bear ever feel cornered. Like, don't put them in a situation where they have no route to escape, or maybe the only route to escape is running right through you. So try to give them a clear path for escape, make noise, clap your hands, and you should be just fine and kind of continue on your day. I mean, I see bears in the field very frequently when I'm out working, and normally they run away, and that's kind of it is, that's what it is. I wouldn't say there's any need to carry a sidearm or anything like that for bears. They're extremely rare to harm you.
Sure. And on the houndsman front there, if somebody has never gone hunting behind hounds, or somebody wants to maybe get hounds of their own or just get into hound hunting, are there any organizations in the state or any resources through the DNR that folks can use to potentially get started on that path?
Yeah, we do through the DNR. We have a series of different Learn to Hunt programs, and I've participated in one for many years now up in Boulder Junction, and that is where folks can come. They actually get a harvest tag, so that one's a little bit more limited opportunity. You have to apply for it, but there is, people get the opportunity every year, so it's worth applying if you're interested, and then you can go with a houndsman. You'll be required to go out and train with them for at least a weekend or two before you go out and harvest one. And then like this event I do with Tony through Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, that's where they just ride along and they get to see what it's like to train. We did a webinar actually last week through DNR just talking about like what hound hunting is, how to do it. So there's opportunities for sure. If you go on the DNR website and type in Learn to Hunt, you'll be able to find some opportunities to learn.
Perfect. Awesome. I love it. Well, you heard it there, folks. Tony's going to be running a Learn to Hunt Bear with Hounds on August 8th and 9th, Saturday, Sunday, up, I think, in Rhinelander, and or that area. And yeah, you're going to be there. I don't know that I'll make it up, but it sounds like an absolutely fantastic event. So folks, if you want to try something new, get behind some dogs and just really experience something truly unique, I would strongly encourage you to sign up for this event. You'll find the link for that and everything down in the show notes of this episode. Elena, I sincerely appreciate your time. This was super informative and a really, really cool conversation. Just, I appreciate you shedding light on this realm of the Wisconsin outdoors and also just taking time out of your schedule to share it with me. If folks want to get in touch with you or find any more resources or anything, where can you direct them?
Yeah, so you can find my contact information on the DNR website, but my email is my first name, Elena.Roth, my last name, @wisconsin.gov, and you can find me there. I'm also on Instagram. My personal account is Elena_Roth23 on Instagram. You can follow me there as well.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, folks, be sure to sign up. And Elena, seriously, I appreciate your time. This has been awesome. Good luck this fall, and stay in touch. Hope to get behind the dogs with you sometime.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube @TheWisconsinSportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Onyx Hunt, Huntworth Gear, Good Chance Fly Fishing, and the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Please go support the brands that support this show, and if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other awesome outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.